2008. We also ask you to look at the budget and the committee's program for the remainder of this parliament, which is 2008 and 2009. We are slowly but surely going to the next election. And we would want to deal with all of that as a matter of urgency on Friday. We will deal with the financial problems also, and why we couldn't undertake the audit deployed to another committee. And we have a new member now with us, Honorable Swati, right opposite me. Can we welcome Honorable Swati to Water Affairs and Forestry Portfolio Committee? Ask him to feel welcome and ask him to participate. Ask him to anything that he is required to function in the committee, what are the relevant acts and so on. Please feel free to get that from the office of the committee secretary, which is here next to me, so that you can at least get yourself up to speed about what are all the issues and the mandate of this committee. There are lots of documentation that can be given to you, and we are sure that as you find time, you can go through, so that you are enabled. If you are not sure about anything, the chairperson's office can assist, the secretary's office can assist to help you to get speed on what are all the different issues. We do remind the members always, water and forest is not just straightforward issues. It's not about the tree, and it's not about the tap and the toilet. It's about much more than that. And therefore, it's important to be familiar with all the different things. So, honorable members, a new member, Honorable Swati from the Democratic Alliance with us. No, he's not crossed the floor. I don't want you to talk about that thing. Governor Bakhasi, you wanted to say something?
Thank you, Chair. I think it was just welcome, and that he finds it very pleasant in this particular portfolio committee. And I know him, he has been elsewhere with me, and he reads a lot, he questions a lot. I think keep the spirit up. Thank you, sir.
Not every day does the ANC welcome the DA, but in this committee they do. Thank you very much for that. Dwarf, welcome. I don't have all the names here in front of me of who we have here. Can somebody quickly give me the names, or otherwise I'll have to ask the DDG to introduce everyone. Before I do that, DDG, there's an accepted practice in this committee that whenever Dwarf come and do a presentation, we make sure that the members are empowered by sending your presentation way ahead of time, so that we allow members to engage properly and intelligently in this. We're not sure why Dwarf has deviated in this instance away from that practice. And we do want to say we really don't find it acceptable. As I am sitting here now, I don't even have a copy. None of the members have a copy. And quite frankly, the best thing to do is to say that we just adjourn this meeting. Because we cannot start a meeting without any copies. If you really want me to say something stronger, I'll say that we just close this meeting and we go off. We can't have a situation where we do this this type of thing. Can we ask Dwarf to give us an explanation why there's a deviation from the normal practice, and why, as we're sitting here now, we don't even have a single copy in front of us?
Thank you, Chairperson. I noted your concern. There appears to be, in that particular instance, a breakdown of communication between our routing office and the Cape Town office, which we even tried to follow up this morning. But to my right is Chief Director of Water Use, who is responsible for this particular area. She has engaged with your secretariat as well, just to make sure that this does not repeat itself in the near future. But we do apologize from our side for the slip up of communication from this part.
Breakdown in the communication.
Yes, Chairperson. The presentation was forwarded to our Cape Town offices, but it wasn't from there further distributed to the secretariat office. And that we picked up only recently.
Don't we have it as you're sitting here now? Why don't we have it?
I think they are busy arranging that, Chairperson.
Can I ask Dr. Gong to get the copies and we'll start the meeting only until such time that there's a copy on the desk of the members? I ask that we just address another matter. Next month there will be what is called the People's Parliament, People's Assembly, I don't know, it's one of those things. This committee was selected as one of the committees that must go to the People's Assembly and participate in there. As I said, we have on Friday when we deal with the remainder of the program, we will deal with that part of oversight that we will then do in Eastern Cape alongside with the People's Assembly. We were not able to go to Eastern Cape the last time due to funding problems. We are continuously engaging on that matter as to why the budget has gone run dry. But that's the first one. The second one is this committee was also asked to participate in the Women's Parliament, and a number of names of the members have been given. In particular, the female members in this instance have been nominated to go. So I'm not sure if you've received any personal invitation by now, but Honorable Sikau, your name was given. The DA name was given, Honorable van der Walt. Maine's name was given. The Shiva's name was given. Besides myself and somebody else. I'm not sure if it was Bengal, Malana. In any case, those members were informed. I hope you were informed by now. It will overlap with our meeting next week, but we ask that we will continue with our committee next week, and then part of it we will then proceed again to the Women's Parliament. There is another matter, Honourable Members, and I'm raising it because it really came to my attention in a very funny way. I said to this committee that we received an invitation to go to Rome. I want to ask the members, who of you has been selected to go to Rome?
If I make it, as far as I know, nobody. There's been no selection committee. We never had such a meeting. Unless I must meet.
Is there anyone that can remind me what was the last thing I said on the Rome trip? What the problem is? Honorable Masala?
Well, I don't know. What I remember is that this committee was invited to visit Rome. And The last thing that I can remember is that we're waiting for a response from our principals in from the office of Mr. Joyce, if I'm not mistaken. But there was no finality about anything. As you can hear, you know, I'm actually fumbling, but there is absolutely no finality about that. And, yeah, all I know is that mention was made of Rome, and we're actually still waiting for word from the church to know exactly where we are as far as this matter is concerned.
Is there any member that wants to speak on the issue? But if there's none, then I would ask all the members, in particular Honorable Subiyani, that there's not a single member that has been selected to go onto the ground trip. And I reiterate what I said, that we are communicating with the office of both the Speaker and Mr. Deutsch to make money available, because Parliament didn't make money available for the trip. So I'm not quite sure where the confusion comes in. And I'm not quite sure why there's an allegation that some people have been sent on the trip and others not. And I think we must use the opportunity to clarify and clear the air, because I don't think we can allow allegations to go around that are of no foundation at all.
Chair, I'm not prepared to speak about allegations, because from my side, there were no allegations. All I know is that I heard that there was going to be a trip on the 19th, that was Sunday, to Rome. Then I wondered as to why we were not informed. As it was late, then I quickly went to my chief whip and said, no, we should inquire as to whether it was true or not. That inquiry has been made, and an answer was found, but what now provokes me is that there was conspiracy to isolate IST. I wonder if the chief will did act in such a way that there was a conspiracy to do that. Of course, I'm still going to ask him if he actually did that, because what the chairperson recorded on my phone, I think it is still here. I'll let him read it and see if it is actually up as well with what he actually said. But I feel that the person who actually asked the secretary, not the chairperson. If it is the secretary who spoke to the chairperson as he was conspiracy, then there's something wrong between the person who spoke to the secretary and actually, because that did not come from me, and I think it did not come back from Parliament. And of course, I don't have to talk much about it, because there are still issues which hurt me a lot. I still have to get an explanation as to why I was made to suffer from when I traveled from San Francisco to my cage. Because my name was there at the airport, but it was not confirmed, it was not paid for. I had to go and see the police station in White River, but there was no transport. So there are issues there, but I don't think this is a platform for it. Thank you.
Well, if that is the case, we will certainly find some time on Friday to deal with it, as we will have a number of other issues that are related to that also, so that we bring some of these things and ensure that there's a smooth functioning in this committee. Those that don't know the office number of the chairperson. It is 021-403-8644. And the PA's name is Shamila, and communication can be made there to inquire anything. Can I find out whether we have, I have a copy in front of me of this, and we reiterate to us, not again. Can I hand over back to the DGG again?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I just quickly want to introduce the team to my immediate left. I have two colleagues from forestry.
Just take the other mic, that mic is terrible.
This one better. To my immediate left, I have Mr. Michael Peter from the forestry branch. He's the director there. I also have Mr. Mike Mugise, also from the forestry branch. He's an acting director for forestry development. Then to my immediate right is the chief director responsible and accountable for holding his licenses, Deborah Machosi, who will be making the presentation, focusing specifically on water use licenses with a focus on public innovation with regards to previously disadvantaging individuals, HDI, as you might know it, and also particular focus with regards to afforestation licenses, basically briefing the committee in terms of progress that the department is making thus far, in terms of accelerating this particular process, and also how we deal with the challenges that we are confronted with in terms of resolving them. So without having said too much, Chairperson, I'd like to hand over to Deborah Muchotli, Chief Director. Deborah?
Before we do that, we were supposed to have representation from the emerging farmers also here. Unfortunately, they sent a very late apology. They will be making some written submissions. But I think we will, as we continue to discuss your input, see how do we take the issue further, because it's quite important to continue to have an engagement on the emerging farmers as it relates to the provision of water. But back to you, Deb.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members, and all the protocol observed. Chairperson, I would like to reiterate the apology done by the acting DDG. That we are extremely sorry about that as well. The presentation that I'm going to be making relates to water use, forestry as a water user. And I also want to say I'm sorry that I thought I had written that in full somewhere. SFRA stands for Stream Flow Reduction Activity, because the trees, as they are anchored on the ground, they reduce the flow of the water. Now, the presentation is on how we are going to speed up the authorization of those plantations. The outline will be to give you a background of the stream flow reduction activity, how we are currently authorizing it. It will touch on general authorizations. We are going to indicate what strategic environmental assessments are and how they relate to the whole function, and what we are doing with regards to the total process of licensing, which we call authorization. And we'll give you a bit of background and what the electronic system is going to be helping us with. The electronic system is part of the streamlining of the streamlining of water use process. Now, the background to the stream flow reduction activity. This is one of the water uses under Section 21G specifically. We've got 11 water uses. This is one of them. The picture from the past has not changed much, and hence the charter. On the BE charter on afforestation or on forestry. What I mean by the picture has not changed is how we have allocated water thus far. We know what happened in the past, that the past would be that only a few people would have access to water use, especially for economic development. So that picture hasn't changed much, and that, as a result, there was this charter. We also are to look at how this whole process is going to effectively, or how we are going to contribute to effective and speedy implementation of the charter. There's the 100 hectares The 10,000 hectares that translate into 100 hectares over 10 years. The whole objective of this is how we improve our service delivery, especially as it relates to the implementation, effective implementation of the charter. At the moment, this is what we are doing under tree flow reduction activities, and that is maybe for simplicity how we license forestation. We do general authorization. Now, the general authorization that we call the GA, we actually giving a license to a particular community, and as a result, we don't have individual people applying for licenses on their own, and that speeds up the process. Then we've got individual, and then we've got communal, tribal, and trust land licenses, where they apply as a group. Now, what we have been doing is actually doing what we call a strategic environmental assessment, SEA. Now, the strategic environmental assessment determines as to what industry or opportunities are there in a particular area. And one of those opportunities then becomes stream flow reduction activities, that is afforestation. And from the SEA, the small growers map areas are identified and the growers maps are then developed. Further on SEAs and growers maps, strategic environmental assessment and the growers maps. In KZN, I'm going to be talking about KZN and the Eastern Cape, which are the areas that have been identified as areas at which afforestation can be developed. In KZN, the strategic environmental assessment has been done for Usuchi Kumchatusi water management area. The Kumchatusi one was done in more detail. Then from the strategic environmental assessment that I've already indicated, we then have small growers maps. Now these are completed for the communal tribal lands of Mtatuzi, Mkomazi, and Mzinkulu. The growers maps area has been workshopped then with the Forestry South Africa, with the communities, the relevant communities there, and the forestry branch of the department. There's a project that is underway to develop maps for the entire province. And that is envisaged to have been finalized by the end of this financial year, which is by end of March 2008. The maps then that are still to be developed will undergo the very same process where there will be workshops with other, with the relevant community to make them aware that there are such areas. And then also what is being encouraged there are joint ventures for communities to go in joint ventures. In terms of the forestry sector on the DE charter. What I need to indicate here, especially on the KZN issue, is that there seems to be a problem that the applications that are received right now seem to be applications that are not within the designated areas, in other words, where there are growers maps currently. So that is an issue that the department has to engage with and see as to how we can actually read them or actually improve on the program that we currently have. The Eastern Cape. With Eastern Cape, the strategic environmental assessment is not yet complete. It is about to be finalized. That's why you see it to be finalized by March 2008. Because then we're looking at water availability studies for the quaternary catchment. No? And the low confidence reserve determination is about to be completed. It will be completed by the end of 2007. So without the completion of the SEA, then it would be difficult to come up with a growers map for the area. But once the SEAs are completed, the growers map will be developed and they will follow the same process as we are doing in KZN right now. But do remember that I said that we do need to have a look at the program and see as to why is it that we are not getting applications as we expected from the areas that have been identified in spite of the program being in place. Now, There's an issue on general authorization, because this, at the moment, there are studies that have been undertaken by the department to see as to how we can do GA for large expansion. But then it is found that these require high-level information on water availability. They require high-level reserve determination. The information, this required information, is to be forthcoming. It's actually forthcoming. It's work in progress, to put it simply. And we are hoping that by the end of the financial year, this information would have been collated, would have been complete for the department then to take a decision as to whether we are going to be going the GA route for stream flow reduction activity or for afforestation, especially in that area. This position of the department will soon be finalized. I am not sure as to exactly when, but I'm hoping that as we look at the level of information that we have, we'll be able to determine as to whether, with that information, we can finalize that by the end of this year. Now, I'm moving away from the simple reduction activity itself or afforestation itself to the process that will impact on how we are going to speed up licensing or licensing process or authorization of the stream flow reduction activity. The reason we speak to authorization is because it encompasses everything from GA to individual licenses. Now, the objective of this process was to simplify the application process, and it was also to shorten the time of turnaround time. We have, as a department right now, we have a very bad reputation of taking too long in assessing, evaluating, and adjudicating on the application of all various water users. We do apologize for that as a department, and we are doing something about it. Now, the process or the program entails the standardization and formatting of application guidelines. Now, the application guidelines, we are talking about two here, that's external and that's internal. The external guideline is that one that informs the applicant. Applicant, for this water use, you need to submit to the department A, B, C, D. How that is going to help? It's going to help us in the sense that right now part of the delay is caused by to and fro between the department and the client, because partly the client does not know what they are looking, what they should submit, and secondly, because what we require from them sometimes is a bit difficult, especially to view an entrance. And the second part of the guidelines is what we use in the department to evaluate the application. When we conducted a survey to determine as to what the backlogs are caused by, one of the reasons was that inside the department we do have different guidelines for usage. So we have looked at what we have. We have closed the gap, and we are coming up with a document or a file that we can hand over to any of you know that we are faced with high-stand turnover, especially on the technical side of personnel in the department. That when we get a new person, we are able to say, this file is what you are going to be using to evaluate licenses, and we then workshop the person on that. And that is also going to help us to ensure that all of us are using the same tools at the end of the day. We then did a backlog analysis to find out as to how many applications, how many backlogs in the department do we have from all regions. And we then decided to just speed up the evaluation and assessment of those licenses to appoint a PSP, in other words, to outsource the function. And we are hoping that that will bear fruit for us, because at the end of the day, we would have done with a backlog. And then we developed a business process. The business process mapping. That is what we then put into the tracking system, an electronic tracking system that is currently developed in the department. I will talk to that later. Added to this, we developed the DEE guideline. Now, this DEE guideline has not yet been approved by the department. It was going through the process in the department, and then at some point it was decided then, as a result of it was taken out of the department before it could be sanctioned by the department itself, and there was outcry on this DEE guideline. Now, this then, department then decided lately that we are to go for stakeholder engagement and consultation on this. So this is what we are going to be doing. The date was set for 28 August and the 5th of September, but then they had to change because the DG was not available on those days. So once we get those dates, they will be made public once again. And then the next thing that relates to the whole process is the water allocation reform strategy. Now, you may want to know why I put the water allocation reform strategy on this presentation, because it seems to be something related to the water allocation reform program. Yes, that could be the truth, but at the end of the day, it is this, the way we are allocating water now, that will impact at what we are trying to do at the end of the day when it comes to compulsory licensing. That small element of water allocation reform, because compulsory licensing has for some time been taken to be synonymous with water allocation reform. It is not, it is just a part of it. So the strategy is going to help us to be able to see how we are going about our day-to-day business in how we are allocating water. That's why I put it under the streamlining process. Now back to the electronic tracking system. The electronic system tracks the business process. In other words, it is going to help us in saying, let me use an example or an analogy of a train on a rail track. It will be able to say to us, the train is parked at station B and it has parked for more than the allocated time. Because on the business process flow, we indicated this is the number of days this application is to be here. That's the maximum. You can't take more than these days. First station. So on the tracking system, it will then indicate to us as to where the application is. Not only just a query, we are able to tell us where it is in the process. Right now, because everything is physical, we are not able to tell. We run around and it takes time for us to respond to the applicant or to the query.
Okay. Can we slowly go back to that again?
Okay, can I start?
Yeah.
Okay. The tracking system has a business process mapping in it. Now the business process mapping says, this particular application is to go this route from person A to person Z. Now, person A, you are allocated 5 days. Person B, you are allocated 10 days. Person C, you are allocated so many days. Now, when we get the query, or when we want to know as to where a particular application is, we click and then it indicates to us that it is still at station D or station C. And we are able to tell as to how long it will take, or maybe let me rephrase to say, by when we envisage to have finalized the application. Now, finalized would mean issue the license or decline the license. Two, it indicates to us the bottleneck. In other words, it will indicate to us that applications are taking longer at station B or station C. And then as management, we look at the reasons why it is taking longer at that particular station, and we are then able to address it. It makes provision for comprehensive authorization. You would know that some of the applications have got to undergo an EIA, the assistant department, DME, the Department of Agriculture when it comes to afforestation license, that are supposed to make inputs into applications. So the system takes account of that as well. I've already spoken about the location of applications within the process. The management report, we can at any time draw reports from the system. The system can indicate to us as to how we are doing in our processing, in our licensing or application processing. As we speak, the system is being piloted in Limpopo and Gauteng region. We decided to do this to pilot so that we clean it up before we roll it out to other regions. It will be running in Limpopo and Gauteng for September and October. So by the end of October, we should be able to roll it out to the 7 regions. And we would have learned from the process. That's exactly why we went for the piloting. That's all from my side. Honorable members and chairs.
Chairperson, I just want to add to the last slide with regards to the tracking system. What is currently happening in the department is that there's quite a large volume of paper exercise involved when it comes to the processing of water use licenses, which results in quite a lengthy period of time before license issues. Now, what this process is trying to do is to make that whole decision-making process transparent to such an extent where we will even be able to showcase to our applicants, once they have applied for a license, this is the value chain in terms of roles and responsibilities, because there are certain requirements within the regional office setup, and there are also certain requirements as far as head office is concerned. Now, what we want to do is to empower our applicants when they apply for a license. At the same time, they should be furnished with updates from both head office and regional office, so that they don't get a message from our regional office saying that we are waiting to hear from head office on a particular water use license. So they will be able to track that entire value chain in terms of what the progress is with regards to water use licenses. So it's basically just to speed up the process as such and also make it transparent to our applicants so that they know exactly where in the value chain that water use license is.
Thank you very much, Dwarf. Just before I open up to the committee, I just want to understand, you see, what we would have wanted to get out of the session is insofar as poverty alleviation is concerned, and water in particular. Of course, we wanted to talk about the licensing, we wanted to talk about the forestry and so on, because those are your tools that you use to make sure that previously disadvantaged people, women, young people, all get access to whatever activities. And then we wanted you to zoom in particular to the small emerging farmers. Now, I don't hear that part, so that's why I was waiting for somebody else who's going to add to that section. Because insofar as the small emerging farmers are concerned, here is one group of people that we have agreed in South Africa that are one group of people that we must do everything to empower and to make sure. And in your instance, your empowerment is through water use, and of course all the other things. So I don't hear that part, DDG. And the second thing that we also don't hear, we're happy to understand this sort of organogram that you gave us, to explain to us all the procedures, and of course I think the members should engage in it also. But I think what we would want, of course, yes, there are all these things. Have we been able to make significant progress in changing things to the better for the very people that we are talking about? Have we been able to say with confidence that indeed we are starting to alleviate poverty where it is needed? So I think if you can assist us to speak to those issues also, because I think what we really would want to, what contribution are you making in this instance to alleviate poverty and to make sure that we change the lives of people for the better in this instance? So I think if you can help us with that. But honorable members, Arnsa, Swate, Lashira.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to know, they could maybe just assist me. You know, sometimes we run around so much these days with the faculty of education. Sometimes people get certain dates. I just wanted to know if they could tell me when the BEEE charter was finalized, and then at the same time, how were the people that the charter was supposed to benefit informed of the finalization? Did the department make an effort, for instance, for each community to workshop communities in relation to the charter, to make the charter really known among the communities that it's supposed to benefit? Secondly, Chairperson, the maps that you drew up. Okay, some are drawn up. The maps that you're going to use for planting areas. I forgot the word now. In any event, some of these maps are already in existence, according to your presentation. I wanted to know, but at the same time you said that people have already applied for licenses, but that they applied the licenses outside of the areas that were mapped. So I wanted to know that some of these maps are already in existence. How well are these maps known to the communities that it's supposed to be in? And also, were communities informed, if indeed they were supposed to, before they actually applied for licenses, that they ought to apply for licenses within the areas that were mapped, so that they don't apply for areas that are not mapped? And I would also like to know, Chairperson, how long before the tracking system will actually be, what is the targeted time frame for the finalization of an application? Presenter said that we recognize that in the department is still taking too long and there are certain bottlenecks and so on. Okay. I hear that. It's good that the problem has been picked up by the department. Now, I'm certain you must have a targeted time frame. You must be saying to yourself, we would like to do it in X number of days. If you've done that, what is it? And then just finally, how long before it actually is, this is what I wanted to ask, the tracking system would actually be in place, up and running, and ready to go. Thank you, Jesus. I hope I didn't take much of your time.
Thank you very much, Jefferson, and thank you very much for having given us the well-presented slides. And my question also is relating to what Honorable Member just indicated in terms of the BEEE. You indicated that in your report that the department did not yet approve the BEEE because some people, I understood, that had of the got information just before. And so I just wanted to know what will happen with regard to that, because if that the government did not approve and people had to have that information prior that time, so what's going to happen? And with regard to water allocation reform strategy that you've just indicated, I just want to find out as to whether do the people on the ground understand exactly what is going to happen, because you might find that if this strategy is going to be implemented and people don't understand exactly what is actually needed from them, it might also cause another problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to know if when you finalize with this community workshops, the department is still going to monitor if those communities are still doing well. And the second one is, maybe you can explain to us the backlog in KZN and Eastern Cape. Thank you.
Thank you, Sir President. I'm somehow worried about the Eastern Cape. I understand it was said there are places that have been identified in the Eastern Cape.
And then they are still waiting for the response if I had it well. So I want to know if how long have they been waiting for the response and what steps are being taken as a follow-up. Thank you, Chairman.
If there are no other hands, let me just double-check with the department also. Well, of course, we were quite excited when we saw one of the issues in government industrial strategy is the aspect of forestry. And could you maybe explain to us your linking, obviously, with DTI in this instance and the policies that they have initiated with regards to economic growth, because of course there's a relationship. Economic growth, poverty alleviation, and of course the need for a greater afforestation. Could you maybe walk us a little bit through this a little bit more on these initiatives with the DTI? Let's allow you to ask some questions and then answer some questions. We'll see the second round of questions from the members.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must acknowledge that there's quite a lot of details behind this rather high-level presentation that was given here. And just to start with your last remark with regards to DTI, there has been an extensive consultation process with DTI, especially as far as the BEE code itself is concerned with respect to the charter. But that process I'll leave to Mike Warren to explain to you, because there's also a question being raised, Mike Keaton. My apologies. A question being, there seems to be a colleague where between the two of them there's quite heated debate often, so I have to correct that. Michael Peter. With regard to the consultation processes as far as the charter is concerned, with regard to the consultation processes as far as the auto allocation reform strategy is concerned, in terms of communities, there's a number of processes happening, and I'd like to leave that to both my colleague Deborah Machotti and Mike to explain how we've went around communities to bring them on board as far as these initiatives are concerned. We are also trying to move as a department from being an enabler to being a driver as far as economic development is concerned, because often water is seen as we respond to an economic agenda, and we are saying that we are so much core and central to that agenda. We have to come up with a plan. We have to make it happen. And currently in the Eastern Cape, we are busy at this present time to put together what we call actually a memorandum of understanding between the Department of Water Affairs and the provincial department to ensure that how do we fast-track socio-economic development with, specifically with regards to the Mzumbubu area as far as Eastern Cape is concerned. That is happening. We had consultations with the DG from the province there, and as soon as something might come up. But again, these action plans are being prepared by the department, but I think it's time that we really highlight how we roll it out in terms of actual progress against these particular plans that we do have in place. So as far as the growers' map is concerned, Honourable Member Aronsa, yes, these are in existence, but you are quite right. People are applying for what is licenses outside these areas, and what are we doing as a department? And so that is clearly linking to our communication strategy. Again, how involved are we as a department on the ground? And I'd like my colleagues to respond to that as well. The tracking system, I would like to believe that we'll have it in place this financial year, but I don't want to put my manager under pressure. It is a burning issue. We need to get it out, because that is quite central to us speeding up the process as far as what is licenses is concerned. But I would like, at this point in time, to hand over to my colleagues from forestry to start with the charter process in terms of the consultation, because there were various issues also raised from our last workshop in terms of the launch as far as the charter is concerned. And maybe Mike, you can enlighten the committee on that as well.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I thank her for clarifying the difference between myself and our colleague in order, which is an important point of clarity. Chairperson, with your permission, I'll start with the charter and the process before that, because it leads on to the interaction with DTI and specifically the objective of today's meeting, which is to talk about how forestry and water are contributing towards poverty alleviation. In terms of the question that the Honourable Member asked about the launch of the Charter, the Minister launched the final draft on the 25th of June of this year. What follows that process, when I say the final draft, that's the draft as has been developed over a two-year process, and maybe just linking that to the other question that we had from the Honourable Member about community involvement in the development of the draft. As far back as 2005, then Minister Sonjita went out to different parts of the country and held regional Izimbizos with the communities, specifically to talk about the Charter. She in fact tried to encourage communities not to talk about afforestation licensing and other general problems, but to raise awareness around what the objectives of the Charter were, both in terms of transformation and in growth and development in forestry, and ask them to be mindful of the fact that we were developing this process with the specific intention of alleviating poverty, but going beyond poverty alleviation and actually creating economic wealth through forestry for historically disadvantaged communities, and in particular women. So that was sort of put out at a very high level right at the outset. There has also been an accompanying communication strategy that RAF has been running and implementing parallel with the Charter development process to ensure the communities on board. There's been dialogue through community radio, there's been publications in different languages, particularly the languages where expansion and growth is targeted, so it's across into Zulu, even up into Limpopo, in Tshivenda, even though it's not so much there about new afforestation as much as it is about unlocking opportunities, matching current resources to market. So there's been extensive consultation throughout the process. As I said, the Charter was launched on the 25th of June. There was a concern raised there that, in fact, there hadn't been significant interaction with traditional authorities in the development of the process, and that was picked up as an oversight, but it was made clear at the launch, what I'm about to explain now, that the process hasn't been finalized with the Charter. What followed the launch in June was a series of further consultations with stakeholders now that they had the draft, because up until that point, obviously, we were engaging only with key stakeholders. Now the Charter was out for public consumption, was posted onto the DWAF website, and there was a series of further consultation workshops which took place during July to get feedback from all stakeholders now on concerns that they may have around the Charter. The plan going forward from there is to consolidate those inputs, update the Charter, and then submit to the Minister of Trade and Industry, to the DEE Council, which has been established, and to Cabinet, the final draft for gazetting during September, October. So those are the proposed timeframes and the process that was followed to try and ensure that there was participation by the key stakeholders. I think coming to the next question, Honourable Chairperson, about poverty alleviation, the entire intention of the Charter is specifically to try and address the legacy that we have, not just in terms of poverty alleviation, but as I mentioned earlier, on genuine economic growth is intended to be broad-based, and it is extremely broad in terms of its focus areas. It deals with existing enterprises that are privately owned and how those need to be transformed and grown. It deals with state assets, the remaining category B and C plantations, and places burdens on DWAF or obligations on DWAF to rehabilitate those assets with the intention of transferring to communities, which is different somewhat from some of the previous transfers that have been done where perhaps it was more time-bound and target-bound, and we didn't ensure that empowerment actually took place. And then there are other specific interventions coming, particularly to your question, Chairperson, about what are we doing to support communities who are finding it difficult, even Deborah mentioned, to comply with the licensing procedures, and there are proposals in the Charter and strategies, and even funding has already been made available, not from National Treasury, but within funds that have been found within DWAF, so that we don't hold up that implementation pending more permanent financial support for the Charter. So there are a lot of things in the Charter, at least, on paper that are in place to ensure that these objectives are being met. Regarding the question, Honourable Chairperson, about the link with Trade and Industry, Department of Trade and Industry, my colleague has pointed out, Harris has pointed out, that there has already been obviously a strong link with them around the development of the Charter. But I think we need to say beyond that, in a particular response to the Honourable Chairperson's questions about the industrial strategy, that it's not really new. Forestry had been identified in 2005 or in 2004 in the Accelerated and Shared Growth Initiative of South Africa as one of the next level priority sector. So we're very pleased that it now has been elevated, but it has been on the radar for a while. And we have been working closely with the Department of Trade and Industry to look at the growth opportunities. DTI commissioned a report called the Genesis Report. It was done by a company called Genesis Analytics, hence the name. But really was looking into what is the scope for new afforestation and industrial growth, the forestry, what are the social and economic costs and even ecological costs of that. And the report came out with a very, very favorable response, saying compared to agriculture, the returns are sometimes something like 10 times the order that one finds with agriculture per area, per hectare, primarily because of the value-adding process that takes place beyond the farm gate in forestry, which isn't there in agriculture. And those results were incorporated into the charter. We were very particular when we developed the charter to say it's fine to talk about transformation because that's obviously the principal objective of the charter, but we were advised by DTI, even by the trade union, who had experience in developing other charters, don't just talk transformation unless you're talking growth and development at the same time, because otherwise we're just shuffling what's already available. So the results of the DTI strategy that they have developed, which we participate in, have been mainstreamed into the charter, and the charter is now recognized as a transformation and simultaneously a growth and development strategy for forestry. And even in the program of action, Honourable Chairperson, the members may have noticed that DWAC is now the key department responsible for reporting on that, whereas previously it was DTI who had to develop the forestry industrial strategy. I hope I've covered everything. If there's anything else, perhaps my colleague wants to end or just point for clarity. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question that I would like to respond to is the one on the DE guideline, what is going to happen, and the water allocation reform strategy as to whether communities understand what is to happen. For me to respond to those questions, I need to explain what these two documents stand for. The BBBE guideline is to help us within the department. This is anchored on Section 27 of the Act, which says that when you consider an application, these are the things that you are to look for, or to look at, or to consider. Now, one of the things that you are to look for is redress and equity. How is this particular application, or how is this license by issuing going to contribute to redress and equity? And one of the purposes of the Act is access to resources, equitable access. Now, that we also look at. So, you would understand that the application takes, like I indicated, the business process. Yeah? So from the start to the end, we need a strategy talking on one thing. We should be able to say, yes, this license on issue will contribute towards redress and equity, or it will not. At the moment, the problem we have within the department is that everybody claims not to be understanding what we mean by redress and equity. So what we get from in the process, because I am the last station, right now I'm the last station, although that may change. When I look at an application, it would say, when addressing that particular section of the Act in the application, they would say that they are going to be employing, there's employment there, and therefore it does contribute to redress and equity. The problem then becomes, what sort of employment are we talking about? If we are talking about the previous farm laborer type of employment, are we then saying that it is equal to redress and equity? So then the problem then becomes, and for Deborah, it does, no, it doesn't, it does, and then it doesn't. So we have to then come up with something in the department that can say, yes, it does. But then, for this tool, for us in the department to use it, the applicant must also understand that when it reaches us, these are the things that we are going to be looking at. If he's going to be telling us about farm laborers, then he knows that it's not really addressing equity and redress. So this is what this guideline says. It says, for you to get a license from us as a department, you have to meet with ABCD. And these guidelines are also based on the DTI codes, not the BBBE codes from DTI. Now, what happens is that, like I say, that it reached some people before it could be sanctioned by the department. I've indicated that for that we are going to be running stakeholder workshop and engagement with them so that we make them understand as to where we are coming from. Related to the BBBE guideline, is the water allocation reform strategy. What is happening right now, you look at when you look at the ISTs that are developed in the strategy, you know, the blue document of the department, you'll realize that that document already, by the time it was developed, it indicated areas where there's no water. And a lot of our areas that are running dry. Now, the department then started on the water allocation reform program. That program, unfortunately, it hasn't yielded much as yet. So what then happened is that we looked at how we are currently allocating water. Is the manner in which we are currently allocating water going to help us at the end of the day to achieve reform? Perhaps the simple answer is no. Why? Because we are continuing to allocate water like we did before, and yet the resources are getting dry. So at the end of the day, there will be no water to allocate, and reform would not have taken place. So we looked at the process, the whole program as it is. I've already indicated that from the beginning, it looked like the water allocation reform was equated to compulsory licensing. That maybe would require a very lengthy sort of presentation for everybody to understand to get the whole picture and see how the strategy fits in. You will recall that there was a position paper that was workshops and all was done. But at the end of the day, the position paper does not really indicate how we are going to do it. And perhaps that is why we have not yet achieved. Now the strategy is to say, this is what is going to happen. Part of what is proposed today, and please take it as a proposal, is one, that where there is still something left, we set aside. But first, there's a target there. The target that was proposed, that is proposed in the strategy, is that one to be aligned with the water, with the land reform, is 30%. Secondly, is that we are saying, we are proposing that where there's something left, can we please set that aside? And we are also saying that now, because there's no water, trading is increasing. As it is increasing, are we allowing it to happen as it does at the moment? So there are certain things that we are trying to say there. Are we also saying that existing local water users can convert the same amount of water they had under existing local water use, where the reserve was not taken into account, where reserves and equity was not required? Can we then convert the same amount into a license and give to this person? So those are the proposals that we have in the strategy. And maybe that is why it has caused a bit of a stir, because one may maybe look at it, especially if you are on the greener side right now. Perhaps you may look at it as being radical in a way. But we need to do something. So what I'm suggesting is that we wait for the stakeholder engagement process, and then we also wait for the department's sanctioning of the strategy and the BE guidelines. I will be presenting to EFCO the coming week. I still have to hear what they have to say about the proposals that you are making in the strategy. But the strategy is meant to give effect to the water allocation reform, and to give effect that is actually anchored in the Act and also in the transformation imperatives of our country. The Eastern Cape backlog, I can't talk to it, I don't have specifics, and so I'd rather begin with specifics than some touching on how much it is that we have, how much backlog we have in Eastern Cape. And as a result, I can't tell as to for how long we've waited. But on average, now I am linking this one to the question of the tracking system and the target. No? I'm linking that one. On average, right now, we are taking 27 months as a department to finalize an application. We are not proud of it. We are aware of the negative impact that it has. That's why we embark on the streamlining process. Now, on the tracking system, we have, as it stands now, the longest period, remember we've got various types of applications, the longest is 7 months. Now, this is what we thought. We thought, because it's a change for the department, and we are also faced with other problems of capacity, let's grant 7 months maximum on the process flow right now, and then we will prove a sample for it. The pilot process that is running in Limpopo and in Gauteng will also give an indication of where the problems are and as to how, given our current challenges, as to how we can improve. But the whole idea is just start at 7 months maximum and then improve on it as time goes on. How and when the tracking system will be running, I've already indicated that as we speak, the pilot is running in 2 regions, and then after 2 months, that is now at the end of October, we would be rolling it out in other regions. What needs to be remembered as well is that we need to workshop and train those that are going to be using, that are involved in the process, and that also takes time. And because of the challenges of high staff turnover, that sometimes is also not one cannot say for sure, but that we are waiting on the end of October to be rolling out, to be rolling it out on the whole country. I'm right now going through the regions just to sort of mobilize and you know, get them to understand how this is going to benefit both us as a department and the stakeholders. The charter thing has been responded to, and I don't think it's so much my call there. Unless I forget something, I think I responded to the query.
There are a couple of hands, why don't we just throw them into some concluding remarks that you wanted to make, so we can give you a little bit more time to respond. Honorable Masala.
I have interest in this BBB guideline. You have indicated that approval is dependent on stakeholder consultation. When are you kickstarting that process of actually engaging with stakeholders? And also, the pilot that is running in Limpopo and Gauteng, still running, but what are you picking up to date? What kind of information are you picking up?
All right, Chairman, sir.
Comrade Chair, it's about this, the charter. I think ever since I came onto this committee, I heard about the charter. Now, it's going on for more than, I think, 2 years, and we are still in the process. I mean, could we get some very concrete evidence or concrete in the manner in which this will be speedily finalized, and it shouldn't be dragged on? Well, I think it is very important for such a charter. We've got many charters, and I think this will be very important for the transformation of our country.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to find out how long do you find the application backlog? Once in a while, or is it the order of the day? And what then and how long does it take you to create this backlog? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just linking up again to the question I first asked about the licensing, the application of the licenses. My understanding is that not all applications, many applications might, but not all, would need EIAs, okay? So I wondered whether once an area has been identified in terms of a map, a growers map, once a growers map has been identified and the map is there, what is the knowledge in the department of the nature of that area? Are you able to preempt whether or not any particular area would be an area that if somebody applied there would need an EIA, or whether there's an area where a person wouldn't need an EIA? And if you have that sort of knowledge or any information, do you make that type of knowledge and information available to the people that are supposed to be benefiting from this?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to know whether there is a monitoring mechanism, whether people on the ground they do benefit from those individual people that have been issued licenses. For instance, in some areas you find out that the people are faced with water restrictions, whereby they don't benefit to those people or to those water services. As you have mentioned here, that you want to improve the service delivery of water to the people. So do you have that monitoring mechanism to monitor whether the people have benefits? Thank you.
Just a last from my side, and after your answers, we should maybe see if we can come up with a resolution. How do we take everything that we have spoken about from here? Let me just ask. Although we're going to be dealing with next week, we obviously going to continue talking about poverty alleviation and in this instance working on water and working on fire, and obviously get a broader briefing on the devastating fires that we've had as a whole in the country. Very sadly, even Eastern Cape has also joined the list now. So not on that specifically. The relationship of everything that you have spoken about and when there are these felt fires, how do you apply all of that, and how do you factor in all of these issues? Then secondly, again, we appreciate, you know, there's a lot that WAF is attempting at the head office level. The part that we don't hear is how do you filter that down to your region? Because obviously we need an access for people closer to where they are. So that, you know, the regions obviously model all these things that you are talking about. But I think what we are interested in is, and I think you would appreciate, we members of parliament, we're really interested in action on the ground, and we're interested in are things happening. And if there are, what are the other challenges? I'm asking this because I was following Deborah as you were talking, and I quickly searched the National Water Act and the section that you were referring to, section 21. Now, section 21 is, of course, talks about water use. And then it talks about the stream flow reduction. Now, the relationship with stream flow reduction and the broader picture that we're talking about, what we actually want to achieve. How relevant, I mean, in this instance, why, I'm not saying you must ignore the act, in this instance, either don't we require an amendment to the Act because, you know, it refers to stream flow reduction. What about the poor farmer out there that wants to use the water, who's interested that he must allocate and reallocate and make sure that some for all forever, but then, you know, the Act speaks about the relationship of the use and then the relationship of the stream flow reduction. I hope you understand what I'm trying to drive at. You know, he's absolutely shaking his head praying. He knows what I'm talking about. So I do want to ask, because I think what we must do is we must bring out the contradictions and say what is it in what we want to achieve in the bigger picture. Is it possible to do? So I am asking. You say, I don't understand when you say, look, you want to talk about stream flow reduction, Deborah.
But we're saying that if you've got to broaden access, and I think all the points you made were relevant in relation to equity, how do we address equity? Do we address equity? My question is, do we address equity when we need to emphasize stream flow reduction? I think that's pointed, and I was in a long way trying to get to Deborah. So I think that's the one. If you can really assist us, I think that you are all ducking the emerging farmers issue, and I don't know why. Both in your presentation and in your response, you didn't answer that at all. I'm raising this, and I'm saying this because as we've done oversight visits, we have seen the problems that the small emerging farmers are sitting with. And their relationship and your relationship with the municipalities in assisting. We sometimes, in fact, most of the times on our oversight, we see the difficulties that arise out of that. Because, of course, their first port of call is the municipality. And the municipality is able or not able, and in most instances not able, to then address how do you allocate to these people that you know that are emerging. And I think that's why we are trying to use the example of, in this instance, the small emerging farmers and its relationship to equity, access to the code the BE code and all of that you are saying. So I do want to ask lastly, I almost said comrade. Thank you. I do want to say lastly, look, all of the acts, are by January next year, all the acts in Dwarf will be about 10 years old. And if we evaluate almost all of these acts being 10 years old, that's why I'm asking the question. You're trying a lot in your head office, but the act is not a new act. How come we are still talking about, you know, we are still sorting out the lights and we still got these targets that you're talking about, you know, we came to all these things that you said. Just help us, Ross. It's almost 10 years old of your act. You came up with a beautiful thing called the Blueprint for Survival. Your water resources strategy. What are the difficulties that we are still sitting with that we are not getting to, you know, this part of redressing equity, making sure that the previously disadvantaged people get access, and really pray and walk with pride that we are indeed, you know, we are really alleviating problems. We're not saying you're not. But, you know, how do we, what yardstick do you use to say that indeed, not the yardstick of how many licenses you have issued, no, not that one, the real impact on the ground, in addition to the licenses. Back to DDG.
Thank you, Jefferson. I must admit, when the name Mike Warren came up, I must say my mind was a bit occupied. He's the manager directly responsible for the SFRA. And we had a bit of a caucus before the meeting, and the slip of that night. But I just want to respond to, especially the previous rounds, I think there's an issue in terms of monitoring that we have not addressed, in terms of how do we actually monitor effectiveness on the ground, progress with communities as a department. What we've done recently, we have conducted a public survey in terms of our overall service delivery. And what came out of that, we have again developed a particular charter, so what these license came up in terms of the delays and the applications and how we can shorten that particular period. So that has been done. But I think what is more important, what type of system do you have in place to track that kind of progress within the department? There is a system, it's a water resource monitoring system that we call HOMS. We have now added to that particular system in terms of how well are we doing in terms of transformation as a department. So when people are applying for license, we will tick off their race, gender, in terms of making that particular progress. And we've been provided with a number of challenges to say that, you know, this is a technical system it doesn't provide, and we've had quite debate on it, and we said, no, the system can give you that information, because numbers, it is good to start with numbers. So that system is providing it. our manager, there's a chief director called Mbangine Fumbada. He's responsible for developing this particular system now, putting in place the shortcomings that we have experienced to date in terms of monitoring that particular genuine progress on the ground. Then just quickly, Chairperson, in terms of emerging farmers, I think you are aware that in terms of general authorizations and Schedule 1 use, that was specifically earmarked to ensure that we fast-track small-scale use by emerging farmers. But what has now happened in terms of afforestation is that we picked up that with those particular licenses, it's not just small-scale use as such. And I think this is where the SFRA comes in. But again, we are of the opinion that we need to substantiate what more detailed studies do we need to conduct, especially where you've already conducted strategic environmental assessment, where communities have been involved in that particular process, and we know what the outcomes are. So again, you know, we are of the opinion that we still have to deliberate on it as a department, because we believe from our side that in certain areas you can do away, you can get away with desktop approach as far as the forestation licenses are concerned. So we are asking from that particular unit to provide us with more substantial information in that regard. But we are very positive that I think that's an area that we can certainly explore as a department to make inroads. We also do have what we call a policy board briefing with the minister once or twice a month, where we've already indicated that in terms of policy gaps, the gap is clearly on implementation, that as a department we've acknowledged. There are implementation challenges that we need to implement, because what is happening, once we're implementing the National Water Act, and what happens at the local level, once we can't implement, we try to find means to say that there's a problem with policies or there's a problem with the legislation. And there's no problem with the legislation. Policies and legislation is clear, we need to implement. And to that extent, we've taken it upon ourselves to bring our municipalities on board also in a proactive manner, specifically around the potential of groundwater use. Because we know that in urban areas, we have the problem of groundwater quality. But in the rural areas, there is vast potential for unlocking the use of groundwater potential. And that is not being provided to the municipalities to say that, do you know that in this particular area there is this potential to use groundwater? So as a department, we are taking that particular proactive step as well to the local municipalities to say that there's a resource here, this is what we need to explore. Bearing in mind that we know what the challenges are in the urban areas as far as quality is concerned. So we are addressing that to an extent. At the same time also, as a department, I think one of the biggest challenges that we have is that we're addressing inequities in the way water was distributed, while we try and ensure that we also address intergenerational equity all at the same time. And I think we are caught up in the vicious cycle. But what we're also saying that we need to be able to not compromise on one or the other. And I think, Jefferson, you've quite rightly pointed out to what extent are we really focusing on genuine progress as far as the one component is concerned. Yes, we are looking into the future as well at the same time, but we need to be able to map progress over the last 10 years as a department. And we are now putting that together to say that are we making genuine progress. And this is what the charter needs to provide to our minister. Once the charter has been approved, the minister needs to look back at the Mondis and SEPIs and say, are those institutions transformed? Am I looking at the same Mondis? Am I looking at the same SEPIs? This is what the charter is supposed to give our minister. And this is why that another round of consultation is so critical, to bring all the role players on board, to ensure that it's not just the charter that's developed by the department, but it's a charter that's adopted by industry. Because that charter belongs to everybody. We have to make it happen as an industry. And I think that's important part of us having to go through a round of consultation as well. Your remark with regards to the recent cell fires, yes, Jefferson, we've lost 80,000 hectares of forest areas. And we know that forestry is a long-term investment, long-term business in terms of its growth potential. So there are these challenges as well that we're trying to address at the same time. And on the one end, cell fires and in other areas, we also have to deal with floods. All at the same time. So we are aware of these particular challenges, but as a department, I think we have responded well. In terms of the water stress, in certain areas we say that, yes, we are sitting in a water scarce country, but at the same time, we've also asked ourselves, why is it that in certain areas the water is in this particular state? And you find that we are sitting in a stress situation because of the abuse of water. It's not properly managed. And this is where the minister is now initiating this launch with regards to water use efficiency, where local authorities will be rewarded in terms of their water insufficiency strategies. And because what you find is when you introduce these water insufficiency strategies, you find that there's actually more water that we can unlock. So we are actually wasting our water in terms of leakages of pipes and so on.
As far can as you include Parliament on that list also?
Oh yes, certainly, Chairperson. Thank you for that. Then in terms of infrastructure, Chairperson, I think in the country, for the last 50 odd years, when we talk infrastructure, we mostly talk bulk infrastructure. What we have not applied our mind to, frankly, as a department, is small infrastructure development, specifically in those rural areas, because the first thing that comes to a technocrat mind is to say that it's not viable financially, but we have not even explored it. So the minister is pushing this on our agenda to say that, what are you looking at small scale infrastructure as far as those particular rural areas is concerned? Linked to that is also the multi-purpose use of dams, because we have these large dams and just next to it is irrigation. The minister is asking, are we looking at multi-purpose use of dams, where you have irrigation, where you have energy sector there? So those are also the areas that we're now unlocking as a particular department. An example in Bongola, as far as the proactive approach to communities are concerned, there we have realized that there is water available and communities are not applying. We have taken that process upon ourselves to put in a gazette to say that in this particular area there's water available. We've consulted with communities, we've indicated to them. This is the criteria that we are going to apply as a department to accelerate HDI access to water as far as this particular resource is concerned. And I think this particular process needs to be benchmarked in other areas. Through our planning division, we are trying to also identify other areas where there is vast potential in terms of water use, and we are not making use of that particular opportunity. Then just quickly, Chairperson, with regards to EIAs in terms of the growers map, I think that I'll leave to our forestry colleagues as well as far as the growers map is concerned. And then forestry as a stream flow reduction activity, again, I don't want to explore too much on it, but forestry has been identified one of many SFRAs. And I think what the sector is also saying, why is forestry being earmarked through such a stringent process as far as the stream flow reduction criteria is concerned. So as a department, I think we need to be objective around it. And like I said, the EIA information is available. We need to roll it out. The approval is as far as the BEE guide is concerned, where we say pending the stakeholder processes, I think Debra will respond to that as well. And at the same time, in terms of the tracking system, I think she has indicated in some areas we already pilot as far as the tracking system is concerned in Limpopo. But that I'll leave to my colleague Debra to respond. So that I just thought I would contextualize a bit, Jefferson, and then I'll leave to my colleagues to provide more detail on the questions that you put forward. Debra?
Okay, let me start by adding to the response to the past question in relation from Jefferson. The something that has been done by one unit under institutional oversight, they call it assistance to resource poor farmers. They have been workshopping the regions and other people on it. There was something related to, I don't have all the details, but there is something related to Treasury there, where there was something that Treasury was supposed to approve that funds be made available, because without the Treasury approval, funds were not, it was not within Treasury rules that the funds would be made available. But as far as I remember, that hurdle has been crossed. So that also, that we can also add to the to what is being done. The other question as to whether we address equity when we emphasize sinkhole reduction activity. Perhaps I could say I think we are, in the sense that much as we want to develop, speed up development and help the emerging farmers and all other previously disadvantaged groups as they are at the moment, is that we also have to look at environmental issues. We know that we do buy, as a country, we subscribe to the notion of sustainable development, which says that develop today, but remember future generations. So I think we are doing this, and I'm thinking that you are also taking into account
cumulative effect, because you have this small impact there, that small impact there, that small impact there. And all these impacts may at the end of the day be equal to impacts of two big industries. So I think we are doing that, but if there is something that perhaps we can improve on, my ears are all open to take advice and to listen to the other issues. I hope I understood the question. Now, let me respond to the BEE. The question is that because approval is dependent on stakeholder engagement, when are we going to do it? I've already indicated that Monday this week, if ESCO will take place this coming Monday, if the agenda does not change, I am on the agenda to be talking to ESCO. ESCO is the executive committee of the department. That's where the manager and the DG would be, together with up to the level of chief director. So I would be presenting to them the BEE guideline as it is proposed and the water allocation reform strategy. And then we will be taking it out. But the dates are dependent on the DG's diary, because the DG is to make keynote address at those. I already indicated that the dates were set for 28 August and the 5th of September. But when I discussed with the DG, he said, Deborah, now that there are these outcries and that this seems to be a controversial, this too seems to be controversial document, it would be best that they read a sanction by ESCO before you go out to this for stakeholder engagement. So that is why the process is now sort of in abeyance. But the dates had already been communicated to the stakeholders. We are going to have two workshops. One was going to be in Mpumalanga on the 28th, and on the 5th of September, it was going to be in KZN. So we had actually thought we should group the country into two, because if we were to do stakeholder engagement in each and every province, it's going to delay the process. In the meantime, the problem that we are trying to address is getting worse. So that's that. What are we picking from the pilot? I wouldn't say that we are picking up something right now. The reason being that it only started last week. We were supposed to have started on the action plan. We were supposed to have started the end of July, but unfortunately there were problems because it's an electronic system and Graphics are sourced with Microsoft. So there were IT issues there that resulted in us starting only mid August instead of having started at the end of July. So the problems we are addressing now are more IT related than the licensing processing itself. So that's why I cannot really say that there are issues that we've picked up already. What we also need to remember that is that because it's a new thing, it will meet up with all sorts of hurdles and hiccups. Especially that one of the risks is that officers may see it as something that is going to be exposing them. So that is that change management thing that we have to bring into the whole process, and that is not kind of easy. How long is the backlog today, and then is it the order of the day, and how long will it take us to clear the backlog? We have backlog, unfortunately, and very much to our embarrassment, from 2002. We do have such applications still with the department. But what I need to bring to the attention of the members is that these are seated in various regions. And for us, because of the nature of the challenges we are faced within the department, it was very, very difficult for us to come up with to finalize the backlog analysis. And even as I speak, I'm not even sure whether that's 100% the correct analysis. How long it will take us to clear this? Very difficult to say, because it's the first time that we, as a department, do something like this. So we are hoping that because the TFC has already started, that by end of November, we should be able to indicate as to how long it will take us to do this, because the another thing that we are faced with is having to do that within the budget. So our budget only allows us to be able to deal with about 25 applications. That is now the 25 applications that are given to this particular PSP that is on board. But the priority would be given to those that have long been in the department and those that require high technical skill that we do not readily have in the department. the EIA and the growers met, what information would be needed, as the Honourable is not here, but what I can say is that the areas that have the growers met, for those ones, information already that is required from the applicants will be communicated to the applicants during the awareness workshop. That is, when they are made aware that the growers' maps are in this area and this area, and that you can only apply for this particular, in this particular region, you can only apply for areas in this growers' map, then the information that is required is then communicated to them. Monitoring mechanisms, those licenses and then the restrictions, water restrictions. Unfortunately, I cannot talk much about water restrictions because that's not my area. But what I know is that water restrictions are only imposed where there's a risk. No? And unfortunately, they affect all users. But the monitoring as to whether they benefit from the license that they've been using, that they've been issued, with is that right now there's a unit that is doing monitoring and evaluation within the department, and they are to look at evaluation of the impact that we have done in whatever service that we have provided, and so the water use license will be part of that. It is new, so I'm not sure as to what progress has already been done. But again, in the water allocation reform, we also started a project there, monitoring and evaluation, where after compulsory licensing, we will then be able to evaluate the impact of the process on individual or category of users. It will depend, we will decide by then as whether to give the individual per category of user, depending on the complexity and the funds available. Sorry? Okay, all right. Okay, yeah. I don't know about that.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Perhaps not on that point, I'm not sure if it's been addressed enough, but perhaps just to say that we share the concern as DWAF around the, let's call it stringent requirements or very non-developmental type requirements for stream flow reduction activities. We think they need to be treated differently. I think my colleague has mentioned that the general authorization or what we as forestry are looking at, saying we've already reached agreement with agriculture and DEET around the agricultural and biodiversity imperatives. We know water is available. Can we not have a different animal to fast-track this development? I think your comment is especially poignant with respect to the later question you asked about, and now we've lost possibly 80,000 hectares of timber. You know, the target sets 100,000 hectares as a target for the next 10 years, and we've in 1 year lost 80,000 hectares. So that implies we need to do something differently if we're going to bring back that backlog and get on with relicensing or licensing new forest nations. So I think the point is very well made. Perhaps just a brief response to the Honourable Member's question about why the charter has taken so long. It is indeed a fact that we had targets in September, which became April, which became September, and only this year now have finalised it. Not to sound defensive, but I think it should be noted that there was an almost 5 month delay as a result of DTI needing to reach consensus on the codes of best practice for charter implementation, which held our process up because our stakeholders are saying we're not prepared to negotiate anymore until we see what DTI comes with. And we try to find a way around it, and I think we succeeded. The chairperson of the steering committee, Ms. Google Malloy, was very strong in that regard and said we will carry on negotiating and we will review the position when the codes come out. So that did delay the process a bit, but we're there now. The short charter has been launched, and there's just this last process that my colleague referred to of consultation, which is important to get that buy-in. So thanks, Chair.
Chair, if I can maybe just quickly respond to your burning issue with regards to head office and region. You've also raised an issue with regards to the amendment of the national audit, which the department is in the process of doing. But to an extent, as far as the SRA is concerned, I must admit with you, Chairperson, it's an area maybe that we need to go back and look at. But we are busy amending the Act. Then, as far as delegations of decision-making powers are concerned, as far as what these licenses are concerned, we are busy with the process now, really looking at that. To what extent do we actually really empower our regions as well, that we can execute things much more faster? Whether their decision-making is centrally, but to what extent do we accelerate the ability from regional office to respond to all these licenses when it comes about. And then obviously the new buzzword that we are confronted with is climate change in the SADC region. And one of the areas that we need to consider is that, as a country, we're still talking excess. And now all of a sudden the global agenda becomes an urgency for SADC regions just to adopt. And an area that we have taken up with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, specifically around emissions, where they're looking at coal power stations to see to what extent can we reduce emissions. Now, when you look at that for coal power stations, if you want to reduce them, you need to use more wet cooling processes than dry cooling processes. So are we talking climate change at the expense of water to the rural poor? And we need to contextualize that. So that is a topic that we've also tabled at a policy board meeting to be taken up by Minister. And then just last, Chairperson, in terms of economic growth, I indicated the other day that of the 40% fuel that is produced by SAFOL in the country, for an example, if you really want to make water, 12 liters of water is required for each liter of fuel produced by SAFOL. So in economic terms, one then really contextualizes the importance of water to make it happen, but not just being an enabler in that regard. That's why I'd like to leave it for now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Now, I think we must conclude now, Barossa. And thank Dwarf and the members for the presentation and the engagement. But maybe as we conclude the meeting, I'm convinced, and more than convinced, after listening to all of your responses, that my question with regards to the fact that all the acts are almost 10 years old are relevant, and we must be talking about evaluations, and in particular evaluated against whether we are making an impact on pushing back the frontiers of poverty in this instance, with that eye in particular. So I want to suggest, hopefully with the approval of the members, that the committee normally has what we call a strategic planning session at the beginning of the year. And we would want at that workshop of ours to ask, we will do a formal application, not the application, we'll do a formal invitation. But I think well ahead of time, we're telling you now that we would want in a workshop type of discussion to bring this issue to the strategic planning session that the committee has, because we think this one is quite important. We might decide to add some of the other aspects, but we think this one is quite important, and all of the stuff that you have said here that requires more than 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock discussion. It requires a real, workshop type of thing, because we are stakeholders, Debbie, as members of Parliament, and we represent constituencies, and we do oversight and so on. And we think that we would want that opportunity to make an input into the process, particularly as we go around the country and we see what we see, make input into this process, and make some suggestions as to what we think needs to be done in this instance. Because we are worried as we go around the country that we see the challenges that that are there, and it is our view that, less administration, more things must happen out there. So that's the one suggestion that I hope, and I'm sure honourable members, you would support that we actually do that and take that into consideration to have such a discussion. I'm not sure it might be January or February next year that we do that and we use that opportunity. So that's the first suggestion that I want to make. The second one, thank you, DDG. Of course, I think it's important that we've got to bring the regions on board, and maybe it will help if you tell us a little bit more how that is progressing. And the third area that we would want is Governor Deborah, it's not because the small emerging farmers might not be within your portfolio. We think that the DWARF should maybe take the opportunity to revert back to the committee in providing us the specifics on what we have asked for the briefing for today on the small emerging farmers. We don't think we heard anything from you. And we think that you should maybe send us another submission. Wherever the responsible official is in this regard. We will also communicate with you formally in this regard so that we won't ask for another meeting on it. We will ask that you actually submit to us what is it that you are doing in this regard, because we are mindful last year, Deborah, in the DWARF annual report, this issue came up, and it was one of the issues that we have raised with the department. So it's not a new thing that we are engaging with the department, and I think that's why I'm keeping on about it, because it was one of the recommendations that the committee has made flowing out of the annual report of last year, and that is the issue on small emerging farmers. So I would ask if you can go back to our recommendation that we have made, but include in there also now what progress have we been able to make in this instance as one group of people that are emerging in the country and its relationship to water and all the challenges that are there. So I think that's the other one that I wanted to add as a resolution of this meeting. Yes, I think we'll take the issue of the fires into next week's meeting again and discuss it a bit more there, the impact and all of that and its relationship. But I think for now, we obviously would want, as part of this discussion, to flesh out in this meeting of next year the entirety of the industrial policy with regards to the issue of forestry. I accept that yes, it is in the ASCISA but it's in the ASCISA program and it says certain things in the ASCISA. It doesn't say the rich things that I think all of us actually would like to see. So I think yes, we would want to have a proper sort of briefing discussion on its relationship with the industrial policy. So I think we should, honourable members, call it quits here. And so thank you very much to everyone. I hope all of you have, as I have, are my verbs right? Thought that it was a very instructive discussion and information that we have received here, and we're quite happy that we have asked you to come here so that we can see how we can take this process much further. Lunch would be served behind in the restaurant here behind, some 10 minutes that you will have to wait, but it doesn't matter. If the restaurant behind, you are invited for lunch. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you on Friday.